Welcome to this meeting. On the platform, we have also seen the Minister of Home Affairs. Welcome to yourself as well, Minister. I'm not sure if the Deputy Minister is on the platform. Just in terms of attendance of honorable members, and for the record of the meeting, we have Honorable Sisser, Honorable Dodovo, Honorable Mthethwa, Honorable Suleku, Honorable Bartlett, Honorable Dango. I saw Honorable Suleku. I'm not sure where he is now. Honorable Motumai was also on this platform. Honorable Motumai was on this platform before, but I see he's not on. Perhaps he got knocked off, but we'll join the meeting. Maybe just from Zulani, are there any apologies from honorable members to this meeting?
Morning, Chair. There are no apologies, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. Once again, let me take this opportunity to welcome the Minister for Home Affairs to this meeting. I understand that officials of the IEC would also be present. We did receive an apology from the Chair of the IEC as well as the CEO. We also would have representatives of the legal teams on this platform from Parliament, the Department of Home Affairs, the IEC, as well as from the State Law Advisor. And also welcome to the support staff of the committee. Just in terms of today's proceedings, our members, we have two items of the agenda. The first is the briefing by the Department of Home Affairs on the Electoral Bill B1B 2022 Section 75. And the second issue on the agenda would be in relation to the committee consideration and adoption of the report on the interim regulation for the critical infrastructure bill, which we dealt with in our previous meeting. That being said, welcome. And we move then to the first agenda item, which is on the briefing of the Department of Home Affairs. Honourable members will know that this bill was referred to the committee on the 20th of October, 2022. This bill is the Section 75 bill, and it arose as a result of a constitutional court judgment handed down in 2020. The constitutional court declared the Electoral Act 73 of 1998 is unconstitutional to the extent that it requires that adult citizens may be elected to the National Assembly and provincial legislatures only through their membership of political parties. Further, that the declaration is prospective with effect from the date of the order, but suspended for 24 months to give Parliament an opportunity to remedy the defect that gave rise to unconstitutionality. The Electoral Amendment Bill aims to address this defect in the Electoral Act so as to bring the Act to comply with the Constitution. In the main, the bill expands the Act to include independent candidates as contested elections in the National Assembly and the Provincial Legislature. Parliament has received an extension on the deadline for this bill, which must be assented to by the President by the 10th of December 2022 to ensure that elections take place in 2024. Colleagues, the task that we are confronted with must be completed in record time. And in this light, we have developed an intense draft program for the committee, which is being finalized. This is one or two dates that clash with the NCOP program, which we are sorting out. And the draft program will be sent to members before the end of the week. While we receive a briefing by the Department of Home Affairs on the vote today, we will also meet with the IEC in our next meeting to focus on matters related to the IEC as well as the formula for the calculation of seats amongst others. It is important that we should also bear in mind the following in the public discourse. Firstly, the President's response on the state capture report, and secondly, the change of the electoral system that comes out of that report. The Minister and the Department are present to take us through the day version of the poll. And all members thereafter, you'll be given an opportunity to engage with the presentation. I'm going to request that all members also note the questions that they would like to post the minister. And we will give every member an opportunity to do that. Let me then hand over to yourself, Honorable Dr. Aaron Masualedi, the Minister of the Department of Home Affairs, to take us through the poll. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Am I audible?
Yes, Minister, you are audible. Minister, is it possible for you to put on your camera as well? The meeting is being streamed live.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Is it visible?
Yes, Minister.
Yeah. No, thank you, Chairperson. Let me greet the honorable members of the House and the officials from the Department of Home Affairs, led by the DG, as well as officials from IEC. As you correctly mentioned, Chairperson, the IEC is represented by the Deputy Electoral Officer, Mr. Shiburi, because the Chairperson and CEO had a meeting which they could not postpone. With me, Chairperson, I've got two senior counsels. Advocate Steve Butlander and his associate, Advocate Michelle Dubier. This is the team that helped to draft the bill. They were the drafting bill. The bill that was sent to you from Parliament was drafted by them. So they are going to take you through the bill clause by clause. But I thought my job this morning is to introduce them, introduce the debate, but most importantly, to pick up a few things which we've been dealing with even on the day the bill was passed. Needless to say, Chairperson, you are aware that there's been a massive mobilization against the bill by NGOs and some civil society organizations and some foundations and even churches. There's been mass mobilization because they believe there's something grossly wrong with the bill. So from our side, I want to explain how we arrived here, where we are, and I believe it's for the NCOP to scrutinize the issues and see if there is an area where amendments could be made or where corrections could be made. Chairperson, as you correctly said, the New Nation Movement, NPC and others, went to the Constitutional Court complaining that they want to participate in elections without having to join any political party, which hitherto was the preferred method to put MPs in parliament and in provincial legislatures. The court indeed ruled in their favor and said the Electoral Act number 73 of 1998, the act through which we have been conducting national and provincial elections since the second democratic elections in 1999. That is the act that has been putting people in parliament. The Constitutional Court said that act is unconstitutional only in as far, and I'm emphasizing that it's not the whole act that is unconstitutional. It's only in as far as it doesn't allow adult citizens to participate in national election in their own accord without joining a political party. They then said the act is again section 19(3)(b) of the Constitution, which states that every adult citizen has got the right to stand for elections and, if elected, to take office. Now, as you know, all these years, that has been happening through membership of political party, and the Constitutional Court said no. People have got a right not to associate if they so choose, and that's how the ruling was made. But right from the beginning, Chairperson, The judge who was reading this ruling on behalf of the constitutional court judges, on behalf of the majority, Justice Mahlanga, he made it clear in paragraph 15 of the judgment, and I want to quote him verbatim, because this seems to be one of the biggest debates that are taking place in the country. The judge said, and I open quote, "Let me mention that a lot was said about which electoral system is better, which system better affords the electorate accountability, etc. That is territory this judgment will not venture into. The pros and cons of this or the other system are best left to Parliament, which has the mandate to prescribe an electoral system. This court's concern is whether the chosen system is compliant with the Constitution," close quote. Now, the judge was saying, if people want a particular type of an electoral system and argue about its pros and cons, it is not the area which the Constitutional Court had entered. That is best left to Parliament to decide. Now, the arguments that are going about from the people who are fighting this bill, who are opposing it, their argument is that Parliament should have gone beyond the judgment and do what the people want. And what is that which they say the people want? Is a constituency electoral system which is said to afford electoral accountability more than the present system. In other words, a constituency like we have got the ward system in the municipalities. Now, Chairperson, on our side as Home Affairs, as a department, in presenting the bill to the National Assembly, we decided to answer two and only two questions on the basis of the judgment and on the basis of what we're faced with, not emotions, but hard reality. We were answering two questions. The first question is, in whatever we're doing in this act, should we incorporate independence so that they can find themselves in the National Assembly and in the provincial legislature come 2024? And that question was adequately answered. This is what the bill is answering. Yes, we inserted independence, and yes, the independents will participate in elections in 2024. In answering this particular question further, we assumed, and we still are, that the 2024 elections can never be postponed. They have to take place. They are cast in stone. And we believe the Constitutional Court affirmed that in the 2021 local government elections last year in October, when the IEC, because of COVID, wanted the elections to be postponed, and the court said no. So our assumption at the beginning of this exercise that the 2024 elections are cast in stone was confirmed in that way, and it clearly means we were correct, because we went backwards from 2024. The IEC further said they need a minimum at least of 18 months in order to run elections smoothly. And of course, at the moment, unfortunately, they've already lost that 18 months, but they told us right from the beginning. Now, faced with these realities, we had to choose what method are we using to incorporate independence, as the court have said. Now, right at the beginning of the process, Chairperson, the Department of Home Affairs developed a policy paper on elections. After studying elections all over the world, we selected 15 countries with their electoral system and put them in that document. Five of those countries were on the African continent. We selected them to study their systems and see where the what is that which is good, which we can take from them. So after developing that policy document, it was workshopped by all political parties where we made the presentation and they debated it. From there, I appointed a ministerial task team, which is colloquially called the MEC, Ministerial Advisory Committee, which was chaired by a former Minister of Constitutional Development and Local Government, Vali Musa. I put up that team together with some academics and election practitioners and say, here is the policy document. Go and consult civil society, political parties, and see how best do we incorporate independence into our electoral system. The report came, Chairperson, but we were told then that the ministerial committee, which constituted 8 people, could not agree on one particular system. They presented to us 2 options, which we were supposed to choose from. The first option was to accommodate independence in the national and provincial legislatures without many changes to the legislation. The second option is what is called the mixed member model, incorporating single member constituencies. In other words, an option whereby the country is divided into 200 single member constituencies, and then the other 200 seats must come from the political parties. Remember, there are 400 people in the National Assembly. And so the proposal was that 200 members, whether independent or members of political parties, must come from 200 constituencies, and the remainder must come from political parties in the way it is happening since 1994. Now, Chairperson, in answering this question further, we looked at the practicality of this proposal. At the present moment, Chairperson, there are no 200 geographic areas in South Africa which you can automatically turn into constituencies. They don't exist. And it means the 200 constituencies must be demarcated right from the beginning. And if you have to demarcate the country into 200 geographic areas, which you will then call single member constituencies, you have got to go to Parliament and enact an act, a demarcation act, in the same way as we have got a demarcation, a municipal demarcation act, which gave birth to a municipal demarcation board. That act is only for municipalities. And we believe, and we strongly still do, that you cannot turn that act into a demarcation board for the whole country, because it's specifically for municipalities. I'm saying so because there are those people who are arguing that the municipal demarcation board should have been modified to turn into a national demarcation board. And we don't think that is appropriate. So we believe we have to go to Parliament, enact an act, choose a demarcation board, and the demarcation board start demarcating the country. Chairperson, in our experience, that is not as easy as is being said by the proponents of this argument. It's not. I'll give you 2 examples. Even in the municipal demarcation board, which existed since 1996, even in that, honorable members will remember what happened in Vuani. Just by demarcating one area into another municipality, that whole place burned down. Schools were burned. Completely, infrastructure was destroyed. That's the first example. The second example are provincial boundaries. Even now, as I'm talking here, the question in Matatiele as to which side must it fall has not been resolved. Honorable members will remember what happened in Mutse, will also remember what happened in Bushbuck Ridge. Taking all this in consideration, our response was not to say no, constituencies are not needed. No, our response was to say within this short space of time, taking into consideration what it entails to divide the country into constituencies, this particular option is not practical, nor is it desirable. If indeed we want 2024 elections to take place, it's a different story from those who believe the 2024 elections can be postponed, but we don't believe they will be. We don't believe the Constitutional Court will even agree. And we keep on repeating this because it is in the Constitution that elections must take place within particular time frames. So in order to postpone them, you have got to go to the Constitutional Court and ask for that to be set aside. And as I said, they've already shown that they are not very much inclined to do that. So for that reason, our answering of the question of whether independent must be in parliament was to take option one, where we include independence without massive changes to legislation, without dividing the country into 200 constituencies, which hitherto do not exist. Chairperson, the second question in this, which need to be answered, is whether it is wrong, is unconstitutional or immoral not to divide the country into constituencies. And as I said, in the Act, we did not answer this question. We thought it's a debate for after 2024. It's a debate for the future. We never said the debate is closed and nothing will happen. We simply said it's a debate that cannot take place now because we do not believe that it will be done in 24 months. Even with the extension that the Constitutional Court has granted, it still will not be done. That is our position on that one, Chair. The second issue, which is being contested very vigorously, and if I dare I say even violently in terms of emotions, is the allocation of seats. We are told that we have come up with the most complex act or electoral system that ever was in South Africa. I'm sure you will ask Advocate Butlander when he's presenting to also answer that question. Is this more complicated than what was in the past? One of the areas that they say is extremely complicated is the allocation of seats. And Chairperson, I know that I've got a particular time which you have allocated to me, but please bear with me. These issues are very important. At the beginning of this exercise, when the bill was drawn, it was thought by ourselves and our legal team that there is too much noise about independence, they are not wanted, political parties don't want them. There was even a say name political parties as techies who can't vote for Christmas. And they said, we don't want independence to come in because we'll believe they will debate this. Disturb us as political parties. So we had the concern that whatever we do for independence, it must be seen as very fair. One of the issues was the allocation of seats. There was fear that when seats are being allocated, what will happen if most of them are won by political parties and independents are wiped out by the democratic process? Those who believe we hate independence will say, aha, we have told you that they were paying a lip service. So the proposal was that in allocation of seats, we do so in three phases. The first two phases is the allocation of seats to independents only, and no political party must participate. It must be their domain, independence, to have seats. And when all of them have received their seats in terms of the quota of votes they've received, is then that we allocate the third phase, to political parties. After a thorough debate and a presentation from IEC, it was decided that this is not a desirable method, even for defending or protecting independence. It was dropped. But in this argument, it is still coming up very strongly. I was confronted very seriously and emotionally violently by some prominent people that were doing something that is out of this world on the allocation of these seats. And when I told them that, but this was an initial draft, they seemed to disbelieve or to believe that we are withdrawing because there is opposition. Chairperson, you have been legislators, you know. In every legislation, there are drafts and drafts and drafts. And the drafts change in terms of what people are saying on the ground, in terms of public hearings, in terms of presentation. So that draft was discarded after listening to what people were saying and after the presentation, especially from the IEC. The present allocation of seats is happening in a mathematical formula called DROOP. There are two formulas which I know about. I'm not sure whether there's a third one of allocating seats anywhere in the world. One is called DROOP, the other is called HARE. Now the DROOP method, which is a mathematical formula, has been used since 1994. All of us are in parliament now since 1994 via the DROOP method. Now this is the method which was adopted in the bill. We don't know why it has caused a war and a fight. People all of a sudden are finding it as unviable and as complicated. Whereas even people who were in parliament via this DROOP method are suddenly fighting. I want the NCOB to try and find out why is that so. But that is the second major issue, the allocation of seats and its complexity. I don't know whether it's because maybe by 1994, people didn't care what mathematical formula IEC is using. They are opening their eyes just now that there is this mathematical formula and they regard it as complex. But it has run our democracy since 1994 and there were no complaints. Number three is the issue of replacement of independence. You are aware, Chairperson, that if any member of parliament or even the NCOP leave their seats, either through death, natural attrition, or through any other method, we just go to the list and replace them. It will still happen even now with political parties. But what about independence? There was a very strong view that we need to go for by-election. And in the method we have chosen, the option one, it means a whole province going to elections every time we need to replace an independent. And some members felt strongly that we'll be in a perpetual election mode that the economy of the country cannot afford because elections do not come cheap, that there will be no stability in the country because every day, instead of parliament to sit down and do their work, there will be the country will be in an election mode. So the proposal was made that we go to the previous elections and we check who was to follow in terms of getting a seat, whether it's a political party or an independent. There's a strong argument, which is wrong, that in that method we said when an independent leaves office, is replaced only by a political party. At least somebody in the media asked me that very strongly, because they believe that is what the act was saying. The act is not saying so, Chairperson. But this issue of replacement of independent, the NCOP need to look into it. Number four, the contestation in regions. Independents are contesting in regions which now presently present provinces. And there was a big argument on whether they can do it in all the nine regions together or nine provinces together. And if so, whether their votes will be aggregated. And most of the members felt we can't aggregate them. We must choose where the independent got the highest votes. And that is the region or province that will send him to parliament. But this is a very big argument and it's still raging. Then the fifth one is about party agents. Remember, during elections, parties are represented by agents. And nobody is questioning that. So what is the issue? The issue is some parties, at least one party, the opposition, to be precise, believe that in order to guarantee that parties are represented by party agents at election station, we must put at least a minimum of two in the legislation. In other words, say every party will be represented by a minimum of two, regardless of the size of the voting station, because the IEC here was worried that some voting stations are too small for many people to come in, especially if it includes independents. And the party said, no, put at least two in the act so that it becomes a minimum and is guaranteed. Our worry, chairperson, which is still a very strong worry, is once you put things like this in an act, you are shackling yourself, you'll never move. Some of us have run elections before. There are parties which cannot even raise one agent in some stations where you find some parties not represented. If it's now in an act, it means you are breaking the law if there's no representation. What will happen on the day of elections when one agent only turns up, when the election set a minimum of two? Somebody can go to court and say, no, this election was not done in terms of the law, because the law says every party must have two agents. And here this one has got one, or in that voting station, there's a part which never had any. So we are asking that this be put in the regulations, but there's an argument that it must go into legislation. And we believe the NCOP must look into this issue. Then number six, chairperson, is a discarding of votes for independent. It has caused a third world war, if I may put it that way. Chairperson, what is causing this war? The IEC will determine before every election, when they calculate, as they've done since 1994, how many votes does an independent or a political party need in order to acquire one seat. Once they determine that, for political parties it's not complex, but for independents, the argument is, if, for instance, I'm giving an example, you need 50,000 votes just to obtain one seat, an independent gets 150,000 votes. What happened to the other 100,000 votes? Because they need only 50,000 to acquire a seat. Obviously, the 100,000 votes are discarded because an independent cannot get more than one seat. If it's a political party, they'll get three seats from this 150,000 votes at 50,000 votes per seat. They'll get three seats, but an independent is one person. Now, an argument is raging that, no, we can't discard those votes. They must be donated to somebody we, the independent, chooses. And we believe that is not the choice of voters. If Motsoaledi did not get enough votes to get into parliament because the voters don't favor him, the next moment they found him in parliament with votes that were donated by Sheikh, what will the voters say? We did not vote for this person, and all of a sudden he's in parliament. So we reject it on that basis. But they are saying all the votes must be equal and you cannot discard any votes. It's unconstitutional. What surprises us is this, chairperson. Votes have been discarded since 1994, even for political parties. What am I talking about? I gave an example of 50,000 votes per seat and a party or an independent getting 150,000 votes. Let me extend the example. What if a political party get 159,000 votes? They are going to use 150,000 votes to get three seats. What happened to the 9,000 votes? They can't give a seat, and so they get discarded. And that has been happening from 1994. The NCOP must find out, why is it causing a third world war when now votes are discarded? The IEC also warned us that they've looked around the whole world, in all destinations, in all countries, votes do get discarded in one way or the other. But we are being told that here in South Africa, we must be unique, find a way not to discard a single vote, because they believe it's unconstitutional or immoral to do so. The seventh issue is that we've discarded the majority view that the Ministerial Advisory Committee, the majority of people voted for option two, which is for 200 constituencies, and they've said we've discarded it. Chairperson, I want to explain. When we chose this Ministerial Advisory Committee, the issue of majorities and minorities did not arise. They did not. If they arose, and we believe it was important, I would not have appointed a team of 8 people. I would have appointed a team with an odd number, 7 or 9. Like it happens in the Constitutional Court, you will never find an even number of judges because they know they are majorities. Also, in a full bench, you always find 3 judges, not 2 or 4. There will always be 3. Now here, the Ministerial Advisory Committee was not made to make decisions like in a court of law. It was meant to advise, and that's why we saw nothing wrong with a figure of 8, but were suddenly told that is a majority. I want the NCOP to look into this issue, and because there are other shenanigans which I believe happened, which makes a mockery of this issue of a majority, but I don't mention it here. I will just mention that on our side, the issue of majority and minority did not arise. But this story has been spread far and wide that the Department of Home Affairs disregarded the majority view, and the party in power, the ANC, followed, and Parliament followed them, and Cabinet followed them. There was nothing about majorities when we enacted this bill or when we're planning, Chairperson. The 8th issue is the issue of presidential elections, which Chairperson you mentioned, which is also being mentioned by Judge Zondo. This issue never arose in the judgment, and so we never even considered it in the bill. The Zondo Commission came in when the bill was far advanced, and we could not even change. One of the reasons, Chairperson, if you do that, you need a constitutional amendment. Right from the beginning of this process, some of us argued that because of this constitutional court judgment, we need a constitutional amendment. At least I said so. I remember even coming in one of the newspapers angrily that Minister of Home Affairs insists the change of constitution in implementing the constitutional court judgment. All the legal gurus which I attended workshops with, they dismissed me on that ground, that we don't need any constitutional court amendment in order to effect this judgment. But all of a sudden, it looks like it's wanted, because the people believe independence must stand on their own for the presidential elections. Chairperson, what is the constitution saying now at the present? It says the president is chosen by members of parliament at their first sitting. And we still believe at the first sitting of the National Assembly, with independence incorporated, anybody can be choosing president, an independent or a political party member, if the House so wishes. Nothing stops them in the war. But as to contest directly in elections as individuals away from parliamentary elections, which we know is happening in other countries, which we know has been recommended by Judge Zondo, it cannot be incorporated in this act. Because, Chairperson, we're not thinking about changing the constitution. And now that Judge Zondo has said so, the president has given it to the nation and parliament to debate these issues. And we believe it can be debated after 2024 elections. But for 2024 elections, it cannot happen, Chairperson. So those are the issues that we believe the NCOP is faced with, and they need to go through them, and they need to find a method to go through them. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Oh, no, sorry. My apologies, Chairperson. Profuse apologies. The 9th one is the issue of signatures and deposits. Yes, I don't know how I forgot this, because it's also causing a third world war. The nature of deposits and signatures. What is at stake here, Chairperson? Chairperson, you may remember that 1996, the Elections Commission Act was enacted. This is the act that brought IEC into being. In that act, they decided on regulations. And one of the regulations is that for anybody to register a political party, they need to show their support, because the IEC was worried of two people waking up and say we are a political party, or five people or 10 people or whatever number and say we are a political party. So in the regulation, the IEC decided that to register a political party, you need 1,000 seconders, meaning you must have 1,000 signatures. People seconding you by the form of signatures and their addresses to show that this is not a party of two people. It's a party which at least 1,000 South Africans believe they can support. Now, that has been happening since 1996. And Chairperson, it happens only to register a political party, not to participate in elections. I must emphasize that. Just to register a political party. At that time, that regulation could not have said anything about independence, because independence were not existing. Now, fast forward 2022, the act now, a new act, that means the amendment of Electoral Act 73 of 1998, not the Electoral Commissions Act of 1996, no, but the amendment of Electoral Act 73 of 1998 incorporates independence as it was passed by the National Assembly on the 20th. Now, the question is, do you put the same measure of support to independence as you do with political parties? In this debate, many members believe we need signatures, yes. We also need a deposit, which I'm not sure whether people are arguing about that. Yes, you need signatures. Now the question is how many? And they said it must be 50% of the number of seats that were needed in the previous or in the immediately past election. We look at how many seats does the party need, and 50% of those must be the number of signatures that an independent must bring. After a long debate, this number was brought down to 30%, and after another debate, it was brought down to 20%. Now, I hear arguments all over the media and the public that we require 20,000 votes, I mean signatures, for any independent to participate, but for any political party, we need only 1,000. That is a distortion, Chairperson. Political party is 1,000 to register a party. Political parties don't need signatures to participate in election. They only need signatures to register a party. Independents don't need to register for anything before elections. They just need signatures in order to participate in elections. They don't register anything. An independent is not required to register and say, I'm going to be an independent. An independent just wakes up and say, I want to participate in elections. And the signatures are wanted for support in order that the ballot paper must not have 1,000 names. You can imagine a ballot paper with 1,000 names or 10,000 names, what will the voters do when they arrive in the ballot booth? So because of that, there need to be limitation. Now, we believe, because people believe there's a discrepancy between a figure of 1,000 in the 1996 Act regulation and the figure of 20%, which people mistakenly say is 20,000 seats. We believe the IEC will have to sit down to see how they make these things equitable so that nobody is cheated. And you are aware, Chairperson, some people are saying this number is required only for independents, not for political parties. It's required for independents and new political parties. Political parties that are already in parliament, nothing is required from them because they've already shown support. Just by acquiring one seat in parliament, that is enough measure of support. So this particular law and regulations, which we believe the IEC must look into, pertains to independence and a new political party, Chairperson. So those are the nine things which I believe the NCOP is faced with and must finish in the next 6 weeks if we are to meet the deadline of the Constitutional Court. Thank you very much, Chairperson. My apologies for speaking for such a long time, but the journey has been long and complex. I thought I needed to give you all aspects of what we are faced with here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. Advocate Butlander, over to you.
Thank you very much.
There's a hand from Enoch Mted.
There's no hand up on my screen. Advocate Butlander, please continue.
Thank you very much, Chair. Apologies. Good morning, Chairperson, members of the Commission. Thank you very much for the opportunity to address you. I appear together with my learned friend, Mr. De Beer, and as the Honourable Minister has explained, we were part of the drafting team that put together the initial electoral amendment bill for purposes of submitting it to Parliament. And as you will know also, and as I will come back to, the National Assembly has made numerous changes to the initial bill that was submitted, and that is quite appropriate because, of course, that is the role of Parliament, is to consider these things and not merely rubber stamp them, but to improve them. And I can say, from my point of view, the bill that is now before you, emanating from the National Assembly, is considerably improved from the initial bill that was submitted. And that is testimony to the quality of the parliamentary process that has taken place. So, Chairperson, what I propose to do during the course of this brief address is the following. Firstly, I want to just echo some of the points that the Minister has made to give context and hopefully give context to some of the debates that have taken place in the public discourse, because some of them, with respect, haven't quite correctly understood the correct position, and as a result, there does seem to be a misapprehension about what's happened. Then I will take you through the bill, and I will explain the seven key features of the bill so that the committee is made aware of those. And then finally, insofar as you need me to, I will go clause by clause, but once I've done the seven key features, there will not really be a need to do clause by clause in much detail, but I'll certainly be happy to do so. But maybe to begin, I do need to just echo what the Minister has said, because it seems to me that the public debate conflates two separate questions. Prior to the New Nation case, we had an election system which only allowed political parties and which did not operate at national or provincial level on a constituency basis. The New Nation case only dealt with that first issue. It only dealt with the question of whether you could include, or whether Parliament had to include, independent candidates in the political system. And the Constitutional Court ruled that it did. But it did not deal with the question of constituencies, and it did not require that constituencies be implemented. And I'm afraid to say that if you are told that the effect of the Constitutional Court judgment is that Parliament is required to adopt a multi-member constituency or a single-member constituency, that is simply not correct. Because the Concord, what it held in the New Nation case, very expressly is, we are not going to deal with whether one electoral system or another is better. All it held was that you had to include independent candidates. And that is what this bill does. Now people can criticize the bill and say it could be different, it could be more beneficial to independents, it could be done in a different way. Those are legitimate debates. But you cannot be told legitimately that the Constitutional Court judgment required the adoption of a single-member constituency system across the country. It just didn't deal with the issue. And I was in the case, and it's absolutely clear. It also didn't deal with the question of the direct election of the president. As the minister explained, that is a point that was only raised relatively recently by Chief Justice Zondo, and it is a point that will have to be considered. But it's not dealt with by the Constitutional Court judgment. Now, I'm expressing no view on whether constituencies are better than a non-constituency system, on whether a direct election of the president is better than a non-direct election of the president. Those are policy choices, and they are highly contested policy choices that countries around the world have different views on. And they are issues that will need to be debated in Parliament, in the National Assembly and in the National Council of Provinces. But they are not issues which are dealt with by the Constitutional Court judgment, and they are not issues which are required to be dealt with in this bill as a consequence of the Constitutional Court judgment. The only issue that the Constitutional Court judgment dealt with, and the only issue that had to be dealt with in this bill, is whether independent candidates could run for the National Assembly and provincial legislatures. That was the issue. The Con Court said that they had to be accommodated, and that is what this bill seeks to do, is to accommodate them. So I say that because I really do think that I'm sure civil society comes with the best intentions in the points that it is seeking to make. But, and many people have concerns about our electoral system, and perhaps many of them are legitimate. But that doesn't mean that it has to be done in this bill, and it certainly doesn't mean that it had to be dealt with in the New Nation judgment, as a consequence of the New Nation judgment. The second point I would make, which is somewhat related, is that passing this bill doesn't preclude Parliament and the National Assembly from looking into those questions about constituencies, direct election of the president, and a more fundamental revision of the electoral system in due course. On the contrary, Parliament is always able to change our electoral system, and so it would be perfectly permissible and indeed inevitable that if this bill is passed, it will keep the bulk of our electoral system in place for the 2024 elections, but change it by adding independents. And then immediately after the 2024 elections, the day after, Parliament would be entitled to relook at the electoral system more profoundly. And of course, at that point, Parliament will also have quite possibly independent candidates in it, and so they can participate. And it just seems to me that this suggestion that this is the only opportunity we have to debate this is quite wrong. And it may well be that the National Council of Provinces would want to make clear in the bill via an amendment that in fact this is a system that is designed for the 2024 elections, and that after the 2024 elections, all of this will be relooked at. And that would be eminently permissible, and it might be quite sensible, because it would make clear to everyone that it's not the final word on these issues. This is a system put in place to enable the 2024 elections to run on time, in accordance with the Constitution, and efficiently, but after the 2024 elections, it can be re-looked at, and more fundamental changes can be considered. Whether those changes are adopted or not is a matter for that Parliament, but it would certainly be permissible for this Parliament to indicate that these issues would need to be reconsidered in due course. The third point, and again it's related, is that one does need to understand that this is already a significant change in our electoral system, introducing independent candidates. And you see that from some of the points that I'll come to. But moving to a constituency-based system is an enormous practical change. For the reasons that the minister gave, you would need to demarcate constituencies all over the country. That is a highly fraught process, but more importantly, you would either need to fundamentally change the role of the Municipal Demarcation Board or create a brand new demarcation board. But it is a very, very extensive process. So unlike this bill, where effectively it would be enacted and it would enable the elections to run in less than 2 years' time, if the bill had instead proposed or insisted on a constituency system and demarcation and change the mandate of the Municipal Demarcation Board, there would have had to be a massive and very rapid laying out of constituencies by the Demarcation Board. And government took the view that it wasn't practical to do that in time for the 2024 elections. And that view, it seems to me, was eminently rational and eminently permissible. And it does seem to me that we might have ended up in enormous chaos if we had, with limited time available, been asked to draft a bill that would have had such profound changes. Now, some people will disagree with that, but the point is it was a legitimate view, And it was certainly a rational view. And as I say, it's not as though this is the last amendment of the election bill. There will be a chance to relook at these issues after the 2024 elections. And by then, of course, there will be representatives from independent candidates. There will be political parties. And we will have seen how the system works. So if the system doesn't work, it's not as though these are the last elections we're having. If the system doesn't work as well as we'd hoped, then there will be an opportunity to fix it and to deal with it going forward. So those are the points that I wanted to echo from the minister. But could I deal with one more point? And it really is fundamental. When I read some of the commentary that is in the media, sometimes by very well-respected people, I am amazed at sometimes how the commentary doesn't reflect the actual bill that has been put before you. The initial bill that was put before you, that was put before the National Assembly, had a number of features. Some of them I will accept. Some of them needed work. Some of them had flaws and needed to be revised. And that indeed took place. And that is exactly what took place in the National Assembly. So what happened was that the National Assembly considered the initial bill. It took extensive note of the public comments that were made. Long debates were had about how to fix it. And the bill that is now before you, I can say to you, is chalk and cheese compared to the initial bill. It is a massive advance. And many of the criticisms that are now advanced in the public domain are simply not relevant anymore because they've already been fixed. And so when you receive submissions, I would urge you to look at them and check that they are actually on the correct version of the bill, because there's no point debating what the bill used to say. This is what the bill says. And many of the issues that are concerns that are raised have already been dealt with and really quite admirably, I think. And it's a concern to me that the public are to some extent being misled as to what the bill actually says. Chairperson, those are the initial remarks I wanted to make. Is it convenient for me now to highlight the 7 key features of the bill, which will, and then insofar as necessary, move on to the clause-by-clause analysis?
Please continue, Advocate. Members do have also copies of the bill, but it will be important also for the public out there that you do the clause-by-clause. Thank you.
So I want to, this is a bill which runs to 28 pages. It's full of technical language, as is to be expected in any elections bill. But I want to try and simplify it and summarize the key features of the electoral system that will be put in place via this bill. And I want to do so at a relatively high level because I think it's important for members of the committee to understand what the new system that is proposed by the bill will look like. Because I think when you understand that, a lot of the concerns will be dealt with. Now, I want to deal with 7 issues. I first want to deal with the position in the National Assembly. Then I want to deal with the position in the provincial legislatures. Third, I want to deal with the question of ballot papers. Fourth, I want to deal with the questions of how seats are allocated. Fifth, I want to deal with the question of vacancies. Sixth, I want to deal with the question of qualifications to run as an independent candidate. And seventh, I want to deal briefly with consequential amendments. Now, let me go all the way back to the beginning and deal with the National Assembly. Now, before this bill comes into force, in the last election, we had a system that worked and works as follows. The National Assembly has 400 members. 200 of those seats are what are called or known as regional seats. They are seats that are elected by voters in a given province to the National Assembly. So voters living in Gauteng will elect a certain number of seats to the National, their votes will be used to elect a certain number of seats to the National Assembly. Voters in the Northern Cape will be used to elect a certain number of seats to the National Assembly. Those are the 200 regional seats. I'm just talking about the current situation. Those are the regional seats, and they are allocated based on the relative populations of the provinces. What then happens is that there are 200 additional compensatory seats, and those are the seats that are used to make sure that proportional representation is achieved across the country. So they take into account all of the votes across the country, And they used to make sure that if Party A achieved 48% across the country, but did very well in one or two of the provinces, they are used to make sure that Party A ends up back at 48%. And if Party B only got 10% across the country, but did very well in one province, they used to make sure Party B gets 10%. Those are the compensatory seats. And I apologize if this is all well known to the committee, but I think it's important just to lay the groundwork. So that's the way it currently works. We all vote for one using one ballot paper for the National Assembly, and that ballot paper is used twice. It's used to determine the 200 regional seats and in the National Assembly, and it's used to determine the 200 compensatory seats. Now, that will remain the same, subject to two changes, and that's under the bill. The change is that when we come to the 200 regional seats, now you will not only be voting for political parties, but you can also vote for independent candidates. And as a consequence of that, and I'll come back to it in the ballot papers, instead of having two ballot papers, we will have three ballot papers, and I'll come back to that. But what that means is that when I am in Gauteng and I arrive to cast my vote, if this bill is passed, I will have a ballot paper for Gauteng election to the National Assembly. And on that list, I will have ANC, DA, IFP, all the political parties running, and I will also have all of the individuals running in the province of Gauteng for the National Assembly. It will be Mr. Smith, Mr. Kumalo, Mr. Jones, Mrs. Brown, all of them will be listed. And I will pick one of them. And when I come to use my national ballot, there will only be the political parties because that's the 200 compensatory seats. So what this act does, or what this bill does, is it enables for the first time independent candidates to run for the National Assembly. It enables them to be on the same ballot paper as the political parties for the 200 regional seats in the National Assembly. And I'll come back in a minute to the allocations. But what it does is it enables, if I want to run as an independent, I'll be able to run, and I'll be able to run in more than one province. So I will be able to say, actually, I want to put my name on the province of Gauteng, and I want to put my name on the province of the Western Cape, and I want to put my name on the province of Northwest. And if I get elected in all of those, then I take up obviously only one seat because I'm only one person, and I take up the seat with the most, for which I got the most votes. So that's the scheme of the National Assembly election. In the provincial legislature, it will be very similar. If I am living in KwaZulu-Natal and I want to run for the provincial legislature, well, we know the way it works at the moment. The voter in KwaZulu-Natal gets given a single ballot paper with all the parties running for the KwaZulu-Natal provincial legislature, and they choose one. At the moment, there are only political parties. Now there will be additionally independent candidates, and they will be able to run for the provincial legislature in KwaZulu-Natal. And again, what that means is that for the first time, independent candidates will be able to be elected without being members of political parties to the provincial legislatures if they get the seats. So I've covered the first two points. The National Assembly, independent candidates will be accommodated in the 200 regional seats. They'll be able to run and can be elected. In the provincial legislature, they'll be accommodated in all the seats. They can run and be elected. Now we come to the third point. What does this mean for ballot papers? Well, I've already explained it. It means that each voter will receive three ballot papers, and you'll see this in the bill. It's in item 13 of Schedule 1A, introduced by Clause 21, item 13 of Schedule 1A, and there will be three ballot papers. I will arrive in Gauteng, and I will be told, here is your ballot paper for the Gauteng provincial legislature, and that will have political parties and independent candidates. And then I will get a second ballot paper, which will be for the National Assembly regional seats, and I will have political parties and independent candidates. That's for the 200 seats. And then there will be a third ballot paper for the 200 compensatory seats in the National Assembly. And that's what the bill makes clear. I should also say, by the way, that the bill gives maximum flexibility to people because it says not only can you run in more than one province for the National Assembly if you're an independent candidate, but you can simultaneously run for the Gauteng Provincial Legislature and the National Assembly. As long as you live in Gauteng, you can run for your provincial legislature and the National Assembly. And then if you get elected, obviously, again, you can only sit in one, so you would choose. So the bill gives independent candidates a huge choice as to which province they want to run in, how many provinces they want to run in, and whether they run in the National Assembly or only in the provincial legislatures. So I've dealt with the first three issues. Now we come to the fourth issue, and the fourth issue is allocations. Now, as the minister correctly said, the allocations issue has been a huge controversy because the initial bill, with the best will in the world, tried to come up with a system of three rounds of allocations of votes. In other words, what I'm talking about, just to be clear, is now we've all voted, all the votes are tabulated by the IEC, and the question is, how is it determined who gets the seats? And that's the allocation of votes. And that's the allocation of seats, at least. And this has caused huge controversy because the initial bill, which I hasten to add, I was responsible for, tried to fix the problem of how to manage all of this by having three rounds of allocations. It was pointed out in the National Assembly that that three rounds of allocations was far too complicated, and the IEC put up a much more simple approach. And so the National Assembly has removed that three rounds of allocation. So there is only one round of allocation. The allocation is done dealing with political parties, dealing with independent candidates, and you will see there that it is dealt with in item 5 of Schedule 1A, Clause 21, and it explains that there will be a single round of independent candidates contesting the regional seats, and the same thing will apply equally when we come to the provincial legislature. Obviously, I should add, it does make use of the droop quota. And I must say, I am, like the minister, mystified as to why the droop quota has suddenly become an issue. The droop quota is just a mathematical formula used to make sure that you don't get too many seats or too many politicians elected. Sorry, you don't get too many people elected to the National Assembly or too few. It just makes sure you don't get a seat left over at the end. That's the only point about the droop quota. And it's been used since 1994, and it's used all over the world, either the droop quota or the hair quota. So it's difficult to understand what the issue is. But then we have is that when the seats are allocated, there will be a threshold. So for example, let me give you an example. In the last election, the threshold to be elected to the National Assembly was 44,000 votes. In other words, in order to get elected to the National Assembly, you needed 44,000 votes. If you get your 44, and obviously the quota depends each year on how many people vote. So if more people vote than last time, then the quota will be more than 44,000 votes. And if fewer people vote than last time, then the quota will be less than 44,000 votes. That's the way it's always worked. It's determined by the IEC. That quota will apply to all political parties and all independent candidates. So if the ANC gets 440,000 votes, it will be entitled, or 450,000 votes, it will be entitled to 10 seats because it's 44,000 times 10. If the DA gets 88,000 votes, it will be entitled to 2 seats. And if the DA only gets 44,000 votes, it will be entitled to 1 seat. The same applies to independent candidates. They will receive a seat if they get 44,000 votes. So the same threshold is used for political parties and independent candidates. So now the complaint is, well, what about the wasted votes? But as the minister explained, and as is obvious, if I'm running as an independent candidate, I can only occupy 1 seat. I can't occupy 2. So you have to decide what happens to the wasted votes. And wasted votes, I must emphasize, are a product of all electoral systems. They're a product even of constituency systems, which everyone or many people are so in favor of. They're a product of the proportional representation system, which we've always had. For example, if the seat threshold is 44,000 and the ANC gets 460,000 votes, that means 20,000 votes were wasted because they got enough for 10 seats. The ANC didn't get enough for the 11th seat, and so the 20,000 votes are wasted. They're not really wasted, of course, because they contributed to the ANC's result. But the point is, this concept of wasted or discarded votes is something that exists in all political systems. But the big point that I need to make is that all political parties and independent candidates are treated equally in terms of the way the allocation method is used. The further point that I would make is, if there is an independent person out there who is so popular that they are going to win tenfold the number of votes they need, then that person has an option. They can, if I'm that person, and I'm not, but if I'm that person that I'm so popular I'm going to win 500,000 votes, then instead of running a Stephen Butlander independent candidate, I should go and run the Stephen Butlander the political party. And I will be able to have people on the list, and I can form the Stephen Butlander political party, and there'll be other people on my list. They will all run supporting me, and then they can have many votes. But if you're going to do it like that, you must do it as a political party. If you make the election to choose to run as an independent candidate, then you cannot complain that your rights have been violated or that the voters' rights have been violated when you only get one seat. Because an independent candidate, by definition, can only have one seat. Chairperson, I've done the first four issues. The fifth issue is the vacancies question. The minister has touched on it, but let me just emphasize. The initial bill proposed not filling vacancies. Parliament felt, I think quite correctly, that that needed to change, that the National Assembly felt. It is now dealt with by item 23 of Schedule 1A, Clause 21. And you will see that you will 21 of the clause 21 of the bill, item 23 of Schedule 1A of the Act. You will see that what it now says is that if someone vacates a position in Parliament and they were on a political party list, then of course the political party is entitled to fill that position from their list. But if an independent candidate is to vacate the position, then it doesn't necessarily go to a political party. What happens is that the IEC goes back and looks at the previous allocation of seats and the previous votes in the election, and they give it to the next person or party in line under that calculation. If the next person or party in line was the ANC, then the ANC will get an additional vote, additional seat. If the next person or party in line was Mr. Smith as an independent candidate, Mr. Smith will get the seat. So it treats political parties and independent candidates perfectly consistently. And it does not mean that independent candidates who leave office will be necessarily be replaced by political parties. The sixth issue is the question of qualifications to run. Now, the question of qualifications to run is dealt with by Section 31B3A of the Act, which is introduced by Clause 6 of the Bill. And what you will see when you have a chance to have a look at 31B3A, you will see there, I beg your pardon, I've now got the wrong page. When you have a look at 31B3A, you will see that it lists the requirements for independent candidates to contest the election. And most of them are fairly uncontroversial. You've got to sign the relevant undertaking. You have to do the prescribed declaration. You've got to put up a photograph. You've got to pay a deposit, which will be set by the IEC. And then you've got to complete the form that is prescribed. And you've got to show that you had 20% of, you achieved 20% of the threshold needed. Now that 20% is what the National Assembly has put in. And that 20% means the following. And let me just explain it expressly. What it means is that in the last National Assembly election, there were 44,000 votes required to get a seat in the National Assembly. That means that if Stephen Butlander is going to be elected, I'm going to need 44,000 seats to be elected to the National Assembly. 44,000 votes to be elected to the National Assembly. Now, what this says is that I will need 20% of that 44,000 in order to stand for the election. So I will need to go and get signatures from 8,800 people in order to stand for the election to the National Assembly. Now, 8,800 people does sound like a lot of people, but with respect, you've got to bear in mind, if you can't succeed in raising the 8,800 signatures to stand for Parliament, what are the odds that someone is going to achieve 44,000 votes for that same Parliament? In other words, if people don't know you and you can't gain enough support to get the 8,800 signatures, how could it realistically be expected that you will get the 44,000 votes necessary? Now, of course, you might decide that the 20% threshold is too high, you're too low. But the view that was taken by the National Assembly is that it was an appropriate balance between, on the one hand, making sure that we don't have ballot papers that are a telephone book and that are hugely confusing, because if you make it too easy, there are too many candidates. And on the other hand, making sure that people have a proper opportunity to run. And it seems to me that the 20% figure is certainly a perfectly justifiable figure from a constitutional standpoint. So those are the broad outlines, the six key features of the scheme. The bill then, of course, also has to make a whole series of consequential amendments, because, of course, it's inserting independent candidates into a system that deals with primarily political parties. And you will see that the bill does that in a series of respects. I'm not going to talk you through each of those. I want to finish, if I may, Chairperson, by just not going through clause by clause on the bill, but just giving you some sense of where to find things in the bill. You will see that clauses 1 through 4 deal really with consequential amendments and with definitions. Clause 1 through 5. Clause is then a provision which deals expressly with independent candidates and inserts a new Part 3A into the Act. And you'll see that deals with the requirements to run as an independent candidate, about how independent candidates put themselves forward, objections, inspections of lists of independent candidates. It's really the mechanics and the requirements for independent candidates to run in the election. Clauses 7 through 19, again, deal with consequential amendments. Clause 20 deals with the amendments to Schedule 1, which is the electoral timetable, and those are the amendments necessary in order to deal with independent candidates. And there's Clause 21, substitutes Schedule 1A to the Act, and Schedule 1A deals with how seats are to be allocated on the basis of the votes, and it deals with the issues that I've covered, as well as questions of ballot papers, lists of candidates, vacancies, and so on. And then there's simply clauses 22 and 23, which round off the bill. I'm happy to speak to any particular clause, but that should, I hope, give some flavor to the committee members as to what the work that is done by the different clauses is. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Advocate Butlander and Honourable Minister, for the presentation to the bill, as well as clarifying the content of the bill. On members, the bill deals with the question to include independence to contest the National Assembly and provincial legislatures. And the option chosen was informed, as based on the presentation, by addressing the realities or practicalities of incorporating this in legislation within the required time frame, but as well as within the current legislative framework. Let me also thank you again, Minister and Advocate, for pointing out certain areas in the bill that need more focused attention by the committee, as well as clarifying some of the issues that are in the public discourse in certain sectors of society. Obviously, this would be part of the process as the committee would continue dealing and receiving public comments. We will deliberate further on the matters. I think, and also the point made is with regard to the issue of dividing the country into constituencies, should be a debate that must continue and be dealt with in the future. Thank you very much. I think, Honourable Members, as I indicated in the beginning, I'm going to give at least all Honourable Members an opportunity to raise any questions for clarity, any comments that they would want to make. I think the fact that I probably won't follow the raise the hand function, I'll just point out members to do this. We get, if I can, in this order, Honourable Dodogo, Honourable Sisse, Honourable Maleka, Honourable Motsumai, Honourable Fadebe. I didn't note you at the beginning of the meeting, but I see you are on the platform. Honourable Dango, Honourable Mikolakis, Honourable Ndongeni, Honourable Dlamini, if you are on the platform, Honourable Mthethwa, Honourable Seleku, and Honourable Butler. If we can perhaps go in that order, can we perhaps start, Honourable Dadoo? Are you on the platform?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Let me firstly welcome the presentation from both the Minister and Advocate Butland. This is very much educative. It is very, very much empowering. And it does, in my respective view, Honourable Chair, explains in detail the bill itself and the difficulties and the predicaments that we were facing as we were preparing and discussing this particular bill. But for me, Honourable Chairperson, the debates that are ensuing in the country are very good. They show the liveliness of our democracy. It's really good because people are excited, people are raising issues, and this is what we need. And flowing from that, I'm very much impressed about the fact that the National Assembly, as we received the presentation this morning, indeed looked at all the comments and took them into consideration as it adopted this particular bill. But then going forward, Honourable Chairperson, as I understand, there is an opening for the electoral for the kind of electoral system that needs to be adopted. As I understand, the doors are not closed, that going forward in the future, maybe immediately after the 2024 elections, we must look at the new electoral system. Now, my question would be, given the practicalities that we are facing now, is it really indeed correct that we didn't consider all this new electoral bill, which we are not, of course, bound to look at, because that is not what the Constitutional Court was saying. The Court was saying, ensure that independents are allowed to participate in the elections, even though they do not belong to any political party. But my question would then be, would we immediately as a country look at the new electoral act and allow different parties, different individuals, different people, including the independents, to contribute or to make suggestions into what kind of the electoral system we can have for our country, given the Concord judgment? Will that be possible as such as we move the process forward? If you allow, Honourable Chair, I would want to come back again if time permits, and please allow me to do that. I'm formulating the second question because this was detailed and it was quite important that we capture all the necessary issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Dudu. I have received a message from Honourable Sister that she will not be able to speak. She is not well. Okay, but be that as it may, let me take Honourable Maleka, and I'll take Honourable Mikolakis next after Honourable Maleka.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to Honourable Members and the Minister, and welcome the presentation from the Department, which is clear. But Chairperson, in the issue of that the bill provides the requirement for registration of independent candidates, this is understood to mean that new political parties are also required to submit signatures to their registration as outlined in the current act. I want to check with the Minister, will there be a consideration to equalize the requirement for signatures for registration of both political parties and the independent candidates? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Maleka. Honourable Mikolakis? Actually, I didn't see his name, so I'm not sure if he's on the platform. Okay, then we can get Honorable Motsumai. Okay, not on the platform currently. All right, Honorable Hadere.
Honorable Chairperson.
Yes, Honorable
Hadere. Yes, no. Give me a minute or two. If you can bear with me, I will come back.
All right, no. That's not a problem. Honorable Ndongeri. Okay, Honorable Dango.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think many of the comments that have been raised in the public has been around the question of the equality between political parties for legislation and independent candidates. If the minister can just expand upon that so we can actually understand that further. So I think that becomes an important point because it's been raised in the public domain quite often. The other issue, Chairperson, is that I see a danger in this, in that, say, for example, if the gang leaders in the Western Cape can raise the amount of signatures required and the deposits required, will they be running as independents here? And the other issue is the question of people now promoting tribalism or narrow racism by using this as independence so that you can use a Sotho-speaking person from all over the country seeking to stand as an independent on the basis of him being Sotho. Thank you very much.
Honorable Dlamini is not on the platform.
Good morning, Chair. How are you doing? Are you well?
I'm good, thanks.
That's great. Now, Chair, allow me to greet the minister and his delegation and the members and everybody on the platform. Chair, mine is just, it's our first meeting in particular in this particular bill. And one welcomes the input from the minister. And I was very, very much listening to the minister attentively. And he took about 40 to 45 minutes. And, you know, when he did his own opening remarks and inputs, and then I asked myself, you know, would one say that it's fair on us as the NCOP, you know, to be given 6 weeks, you know, to deal with this particular bill, you know, looking at how much time was spent in the NA. And, you know, it just one wonders, you know, because there's a deadline and one would want to know, you know, are we going to be, you know, chasing a deadline or are we going to apply our mind or are we going to skip steps, you know, because we have a deadline. And that is just something, Chair, that is worrisome, that how fair is it on us as members of the NCOP, you know, to be given 6 weeks, and whereas the NA had ample time and they were able to, you know, to apply their minds, they were able to ask all the relevant questions. And the second one, Chair, is the issue of the members that the MEC, like the minister has been saying, that are currently becoming so vocal against their own reports. You know, it doesn't make sense to me, Chair, that a person that has been a chairperson has been appointed by the minister to actually look at how we can address this issue of the Constitutional Court, you know, is the one that is becoming vocal in terms of the bill that has been adopted by the NA. So one would want to know, you know, why is that? You know, why would someone that has been there, you know, given the job, you know, and handed over the report to the minister, and then all of a sudden now have a U-turn and then speaks against what they have reported. You know, I think those are just two questions of clarity, Chair. And then when we deliberate on this particular bill, then I will definitely have to go into detail, like Honorable Dodovia said. You know, we are struggling to, you know, because there's the issues of formulas and one, how does one justify that you will want 20% for independence, but for political parties, when they want to register, you want 1,000 signatories, but on the other side. So the fairness on it, you know, how does one justify the fairness of it? So is it deliberate just to put out independence and bring in political parties? Because in my own opinion, Chair, is that you'll find some individuals are more stronger than some political parties. There are some political parties that have been there for years who only have one seat, but they were only given 1,000 signatories to be able to contest elections. But now we want individuals to say, let's give them 20, it must be 20%. Why don't we make it all fair and say the same for what is good for the independents must be good for the parties as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Seleku. Honorable Mtetwa, followed by Honorable Butler.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. Let me greet the minister and the team that is with the minister and the advocate who has just also gave us some presentation. Chair, I see a lot of conflict and a danger in this bill more than anything else. I really appreciated the way the minister has unpacked the whole issue of this 9 points. In the 9 points, Chair, my concern is the issue that if we go to option two of the demarcation, I agree with the minister to say that up to date, there are still people that are aggrieved about the previous demarcation, where you sit on your next door or on your first shop is now belonging to somebody else when people are living under one tribal area. Just with the road, people just get divided. Or those that got two or three homes find himself, or bigger stand, find himself one of his stand that is being cut into two, that the other houses, because they will fall on the two houses that falls under that road, no more belongings to you, is still an issue in the country. I see this bill taking us back there. Also, the issue of the replacement of the independency, Chair. They're still not clear. I'm not clear how are you going to replace an independent that has just passed on while he's still in the office. Do you keep that post vacant, or we go back? Even though the advocate has simply tried to simplify it and make it easy, that there'll be an allocation of those seats for independent. What makes other people not to have one leg on the first side and also the other leg, especially those that will have money, they can do this thing easily. The last part, Chair, that I'm also worried about is the issue of the party agent. You know, we've got political party in the previous election, since there were a lot of parties that has came in, you have seen the infighting that before a person comes into that particular hall to vote, already the hall is full of party agents. How are they going to control this thing? Because now you have the whole voting station being occupied by party agents. And if a party agent is not there, it might create a problem. These are the issue of my concern, Chair, and also the signatory. We know people that are very good in doing these things. Others, they can do it so simple, sitting one person sitting in one corner and produce this 8,800 signatures. How are you going to anticipate that these 8,000 voters' signatures were correct and they were not correct? Then it takes me to the last point, Chair, to say, I don't think that the Constitutional Court looking into this thing and passing back to us was a right time. I think, Chair, if there are means, let's allow ourselves time to grapple with this issue, not just rush for this coming election. Let's give ourselves time, good thought, do our own research, ensure that most of the question that has been raised in this bill on all the options that are there, we find time to answer them and come up with an amicable solution. Let's not rush this bill. I still feel, Chair, we might look good that we have a start in 2024, but this 2024, Chair, I don't foresee ourselves ready for this bill. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Honourable Bartlett.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry for not switching on my video, Honourable Chairperson, but I just have one question to ask the Minister. Can the Minister elaborate further on the provision in the bill that an independent candidate can contest in more than one region, but the seats will be allocated to the region where the independent candidate has more votes? Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Bartlett. Honourable Minister, let me hand Honourable the door.
Yes. If you allow me, Honourable Chair, I want to actually follow on what Honourable Mthethwa was asking. Now, the Concord took made this judgment in 2020, giving Parliament 2 years to rectify what I call the defect and include the independent candidates as having the right to participate in the election as it were. Now, an important issue was raised about the fact that if we were to take option two, that is constituency-based electoral system, even if we were going to do that, it was going to be technically impossible, given the logistical arrangement that have got to be made, the changing of the demarcation board, the redemarcation of the constituencies and so on, which is quite understandable. Now, my question would be, is it possible to go to the Concord and say, given the time frame that we have, we cannot implement the current arrangement, but rather let us defer all of these processes until 2024. Is it possible for us to do that? And is it possible that the Concord can agree with Parliament, giving all those practicalities to ensure that all systems and processes are put in place? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Dodobo, and thank you very much, Honourable Members, for the questions and your comments. I'm going to hand it back to the Minister to deal with the questions that are related to the bill. Minister, if you could please take the process forward between yourself and your legal team.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson, because Honourable Dodobo was the first speaker, but he also became the last speaker. Let me answer his last question, because the first one were really just a sort of comments. The last question about going back to the Constitutional Court. Honourable Dodobo, the Constitutional Court was very clear. They said they are giving us 24 months. And the National Assembly realized that they can't make this in 24 months. They went back to the Constitutional Court, and the Constitutional Court gave them only 6 extra months, which period ends on the 10th of December. And so I also agree with Honorable Seleku that that squeezes the NCOP. It is true, but unfortunately, that's what the Constitutional Court, that's the card played on us by the Constitutional Court. And remember, they are the apex court. I am not sure, and I'm not convinced that going back to them, they will ever agree. As I said, the manner in which we put up the bill and made choices was based on our understanding that the 2024 elections are cast in stone. If we go to the Constitutional Court and say, please give us more time, it means they will have to move the 2024 elections further to allow us that time. And you are aware that they've already ruled in the local government elections that they don't agree. They believe nothing can move elections. Even COVID, least of all, time for a legislation. Even COVID, which was deadly, they thought it's not a good enough reason to move elections. So we don't think if we go to them, they'll agree to move the elections. Then the second thing will be, can they allow us to go to 2024 elections without independence? I doubt really that they will ever agree. And it will just fit into the narrative that political parties that are in parliament do not want independence because they want to cling to power. I repeat again, we were called techies who don't want to vote for Christmas, that we don't want to vote for independence because it's our demise. There's a belief, Honorable Chair, a very, very serious belief that come 2024, political parties are going to be wiped off the political landscape and parliament will be taken over by independence. There is that fervent belief which some people hold very dearly. So going to postpone will just really be playing into that belief. Let me then go back to Honorable Dango. Honorable Dango mentioned something quite scary. Right at the beginning of this, after doing the policy, not even the draft bill, that was even before Advocate Butland and Advocate Debeer came on the scene. It was just Home Affairs alone who did the policy. The policy which we subsequently handed over to the Ministerial Advisory Committee chaired by Vali Musa. I took this policy to the DGs cluster, all the DGs of the country to understand, even before I took the policy to cabinet. And now among them, obviously, are DGs that works in the security cluster, like the DGs in state security, DG in police, crime intelligence. They asked me a question. This issue of yours of independence, what will happen today? Honorable Dango used gangsters. They specifically said, what will happen if the guys who are involved in cash heist have accumulated so much money and they stand as independent and they use the money to do buy votes and do whatever? They asked me, is there a possibility that we may find ourselves having a parliament consisting purely of gangsters, of rascals, killers and people, you know, gangsters and people who are, you know, having money from heists and robberies and all that? They did ask me that question. And my answer to them is, unfortunately, it is a possibility. I want to give an example, Chair, hoping that I won't cause problems. In one of our neighboring countries, when I was a Minister of Health, I had a colleague who was a Minister of Health and respected internationally, especially around the World Health Organization. When you go to international meetings, his country is using constituency elections, and it was time for elections. He phoned me and asked me if I can have a businessman in South Africa who will donate certain articles to him. These were health articles. I don't want to mention them because I don't want to identify the person because they never gave me permission. But these articles for which donation he was asking have something to do with the health of the population. It was not medicine, but it was something to do with health. And this was a QR request, and I asked him, but colleague, why would you ask for such a thing? What's going on? He said, look, I'm faced with an election. In the constituency where I'm standing, the person who's challenging me owns a bottle store and is distributing liquor left, right, and center. And all the meeting he calls are huge because there's free liquor there. When I call meetings, nobody comes because I've got nothing to offer. And then he said, I thought maybe I must offer something to do with health, seeing that I'm in health.
And of course, I couldn't help him on that request. There was just no mechanism for me to help him. And some 3 weeks later, he phones and say, my friend, I've lost that seat to the bottle store owner. Meaning that seat was bought with liquor through this system. So that is why the judge said, as to which system is better, which system affords more accountability, which system has more pros and cons. He left that to Parliament to debate, and these are the issues that must be debated. But we believe in this particular bill, there was just no chance or no time, and that they can be debated in 2024. But these are some of the things. Honorable Dango goes on about tribalism. Yes, during the debate, these things were raised, and I'm sure they'll be raised in chapter 2024, that the reason that the country chose a proportional representation was because of the spatial layout and development of South Africa, where in one area of South Africa, you find a particular national group. In other areas, you find a particular tribe. Remember, we come from that era of apartheid. And the question 30 years ago at CODESA was whether we are ready to do something different. And that's why the proportional representation system, as we are using today, was arrived at. So the question is, in that 28 years of democracy, has that changed enough for us to leave that system? So these are the debates that needs to be entered into, and we believe, and we still believe, that there was not enough time in 24 months to enter such debates as Honorable Dango is asking. These are the lively debates that must go on, according to us, after 2024, because there will be time, and everybody in South Africa will be given an opportunity. Honorable Selig, you also ask a very serious question, whether the 6 weeks deadline is fair for NCOP. Unfortunately, as I said, I don't think it's fair or enough, but unfortunately, that is what the Apex Court have said. We have got no option just to do it because I don't think they will grant us any other reprieve. Now, the question is, why will somebody who has been given opportunity to run this process officially go again and start challenging the same report? That's also puzzling us, Honorable Seleku. Unfortunately, I don't have an answer to it, but it really puzzled me greatly, and I just could not understand it. Even today, I don't have answers. It's something that I, as an individual, would not have done, but we are not the same. The last question from Honorable Seleku, is this fairness of 1,000 signatures for an independent, for a political party to register, and 20% for an independent? Maybe I did not explain it well, Honorable Seleku. I flagged it as one of the controversial issues. And I said, the reason that it is so is because these figures appear at different times in the country and in different legislation. The 1,000 was determined in 1996 by the IEC in the regulations of the Electoral Commissions Act, the legislation that brought IEC into being. That is where the 1,000 signatures for a political party to register appear. Now, at that time, they could not have said a thing about independence because they did not exist. Now, when you fast forward 2022, Parliament is now faced with a similar dilemma, that independents don't register, but they want to participate for elections. And Advocate Bartlett has already mentioned, you can't have a ballot paper which is as big as a phone book. That means with 1 million independents or even 1,000 independents, you need to have a criteria that excludes. And one of the criteria is to show support. Advocate Bartlett has already given an example. If you need 8,000 signatures to appear on the ballot, and you fail even to raise 8,000 signatures, how are you going to raise 44,000 seats to get into Parliament? It means you are a chance taker. So for that reason, the National Assembly or the bill needed a qualifying criteria. and that qualifying criteria was put at 20% in this act, which is the amendment of the Electoral Act of Act Number 73 of 1998, which differs markedly from the Electoral Commission's Act to establish IEC. So what am I trying to say? Yes, Honorable Selig, it will be unfair to have different standards for independence and a different standard for political parties. But there was no way this act will have dealt with it, because the act was dealing with amendment of the Electoral Act Number 73 of 1998, whereas the issue of political parties is dealt with in a different act. So what is the answer? The answer is that, yes, I agree, Honorable Selig, it has been fair. And the only structure that could bring this fairness is the IEC. They must find a method, the IEC, how to make sure that the number of votes a political party needs to register for elections is not much, much less than the number of votes for an independent to be on the ballot. In other words, they must equalize it. There was no way that National Assembly could have equalized that in this particular act, because one appears in a different act and they were not dealing with that different act. But only the IEC can do this. And we believe when you call them, they might be able to explain to you how they are going to do it. But they are acutely aware of this problem. And members of the public believe that the decision we have taken deliberately to make it difficult for independents to participate in elections. And I want to emphasize, it is not so. Honorable Muteto, you said you wanted a clarity on how independents are replaced. Yes, it was also a huge debate. Remember, the independents are accommodated in what is presently called province to national list. There are members of parliament who arrived in parliament through what is called province to national list, meaning a political party sent them as a representative coming from another province, while other members came with what is called national to national. I'm sure you know that terminology. So we thought the best way to accommodate independence is via the province to national list. Now, how then do you replace them when they go away? Do you go back to that regional, to that province, to that regional region where the person came from and hold a by-election? If you do so, it's not like holding a by-election for a ward councillor who has left. It means you must hold provincial-wide elections. It means there must be a by-election in that whole province. The question is, what is the practicability? That always when somebody leaves a province, the whole province must go to elections. When at the present moment, provinces only go to elections after 5 years, how many times will that province be going to elections? And what will be the financial implications, the time implications, and all practical implications of a country that is perpetually going on elections? So we realize that for that practicality, this cannot be entertained. Then what? What do we do? Do we leave the seat vacant? There were those who said so, that it must be left vacant until the next election. And others said no, that is going to interfere with proportionality in parliament. What if 10 independents leave in that particular 5 years? It means by the end of the 5 years, parliament will be having 10 less people every time not replaced. That's the final agreement, is that let us replace them, but not through a by-election. Let's go to the previous election. Every election always have a person where the cutoff point happens with them. They always have a person where who could have got in if the one above did not beat them by vote. So there will always be a person who was about to. And they said, we go and look into that person. Whether it's a political party or an independent, that person must come in who was just hanging. At the present moment, how is it done? In every political party, there's a list, Honorable Muteto. If somebody passes on, the political party go to that list and say, Mutualedi was next to follow. If the cutoff point was not with him, so let him come in. And it's easier in that way. Or the political party decides to review their list and put somebody else. Now, if it's an independent, what do they do? And they said, no, that seat must be available to the person who nearly got in, whether that person represents a political party or independent. And that's how it was resolved, Honorable Mteto. Then the issue of party agents, yes, it's a good question. And that's what the IEC was asking. How do you correct them? If there are 1,000 independents, are you going to, in one station, find 1,000 party agents, maybe because they are even saying two, find 2,000 party agents plus the party agents for political parties? How practical will that be? That is why we are insisting. The issue of party agents, let's leave it to the IEC, where it will differ perhaps from station to station, but they've always found a way on how to deal with these things. We are against putting it in the act, as some parties are insisting, because once you put it in an act, you will never be able to change when the practical situation on the ground demands it. The fourth question from Honorable Mteto is whether are we not worried about the signatures, that people will go on a signature campaign and just get people who do not exist. Unfortunately, the IEC will have to check the authenticity of such individuals. Remember, they've got addresses, as was ordered by the Constitutional Court, that on the voter's roll, there must be addresses. These are individuals who must be on the voter's roll. You can't be supported by people who did not even register for elections. So the IEC will go and check that. Unfortunately, it just means an administrative nightmare for the IEC, but they've got no option but to do it. Honorable Mteto, you are also saying we need more time for these options. We agree with you 100%. That's why we could not even look at the option of constituencies, because that one even needs more time. If Honorable Mteto, you are saying we need more time, even with this option where we did not change much, what more about constituencies? We agree with you, but unfortunately, we've got a Constitutional Court deadline to reckon with. And there is nothing we can do. We just have to meet that deadline. Honorable Bartlett, you ask a question about, yes, the clarity about independent candidates contesting in more regions. Yes, there was a big debate about this issue. That because political parties have got what at the present moment is called national to national, meaning they've got a free footprint in the whole nation. That's what we call, we're in the bill, is called compensatory seat. In the old or the present situation, it's called national to national. Since the political parties have got national to national, why do we confine independent to one province? What if the independent could be popular in more than one province because they've got a national profile? So they said to solve the problem, let's allow the independent to contest in whatever province they wish to, in as many as possible. But in the act, it then says, after the election results come in, the independents will be allocated to the province or region where they got the most votes. And then the others are forgotten about. There are people who say they must be added. All of them must be added together. Now, that will bring extreme unfairness to political parties, because a member of a political party was contesting in only one region. It's not allowed to go to all the other regions. And we're allowing independents to contest in all the regions. If you aggregate their votes, then no member of a political party will ever win against an independent in a particular region. That's why we said, yes, they can participate all over in order to have a national footprint, just like political parties, but they'll only take a seat in the province or from a province or a region where they've got the highest number of votes. I'm wondering, Honorable Bartlett, whether I've explained it very well, but that's exactly how it appears in the bill and how it is going to be. Thank you very much.
I'm sure Advocate Butlander will have something to add.
Advocate?
Thank you very much, Chair. Now, Minister, you've with respect done extremely well on the various legal issues. I just have three brief points to make. The first and perhaps the most important is just to be clear that I don't think there's any prospect of avoiding deciding these questions of the independent candidates before the 2024 election. It's quite clear that the Constitutional Court requires that to be addressed before the 2024 elections, and I do appreciate the pressure it puts everyone under, but that will have to be done. The second point is just on the signatures. It does seem to me that we should wait for the Electoral Commission to make their proposals, but could I say that I do think from a constitutional standpoint, it is important to equalize the signatures that a political party requires to contest an election and those that an independent candidate requires. Obviously, if you are a political party who's already got a seat, or you're an independent, or in future you're an independent candidate who's already got a seat, then it would be permissible for Parliament to say you don't have to go through the signatures again because you've proved your support. But if you are a political party without a seat or an independent without a seat, then it is necessary for that to be done. And I'd be happy to consider what the Electoral Commission says, but it's important to, I think, put that, find a way of dealing with that as a mechanism. And the third question the Minister has answered. Yes, those cover the issues I wish to address. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Advocate, and thank you very much, Minister, and thank you very much, Honourable Members. I know that this was a very lengthy engagement, but I thought it was also very important, and it was very fruitful in terms of the committee trying to develop that understanding and context in relation to this bill. The engagement, while it does provide clarity on the bill in its current form, there are still areas for further engagement, which we will continue with the department as we engage further on this bill. The committee has advertised the bill for public comment on all relevant platforms, and the closing date of that is the 9th of November, 2022. And I think we call on all stakeholders and the public at large to make their comments by the 9th of November. And as I've indicated on the members, we will, as a committee, meet with the IEC in our next meeting. And I think some of the questions also related to the technicalities around seat calculation, the issues of signatures, amongst others, we will also pursue further when we engage with the IEC. I've indicated earlier in this meeting that the draft program for the committee engagements on the floor will be sent to members. And I think it's important that as an institution and as a committee, that we try our level best and are committed to trying to meet the deadline for this bill, as well as to follow due process. I think we remain committed to meeting this deadline. I think we should repeat that. I think if there's one thing we would not want to do is to prevent the holding of elections in 2024. I think that being said, Honourable Members, I propose that we close on this agenda item, and we will continue the discussion and the debate around this matter in our next meeting. And obviously, as comments come in from the public, we will also continue looking at the various issues that the department has pointed out, as well as what comes out of the public engagement process. That being said, our members, I'm going to close on this item so that we move on to the next agenda item. So please do not log off. But let me once again thank the minister and the team who are present with the minister for their input, and also to release you, minister, and your team from the platform if you wish to be released. As the committee, we'll then move on to the next agenda item, which, Honourable Members, is on the, which is on the interim regulations for the critical infrastructure call. The committee report, we received a briefing in our last meeting on the matter, and the report has been sent to all honorable members.
Chairperson, yes, I know. Yes, you have released us. We just want the opportunity to thank you very much and thank the legal team. And thank you and good luck. We are knocking off. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister, and everybody else that is going off. On members, just in terms of the report, I think the introduction and the background, it gives the background to the draft regulations, as well as provides what is contained in the various aspects of the regulations. And we also indicate in the report that we were briefed on the matter, as well as on the amendments that were made by the National Assembly to the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act regulations. And as a committee, we did not make any further recommendations to that of the National Assembly. And in terms of our recommendation, we have been considered the interim critical infrastructure protection regulations in terms of Section 27 of the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act 2019. We recommend that the National Council of Provinces approve the interim regulations. Honourable members, let me open it up to yourself. If you have any addition and or correction you would want to make to this report, if you could please give an indication thereof. If you are happy with the report, if you wish to have it adopted, please also give that indication. Honourable members? Honourable members? Am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Honorable Dango?
I was just saying you're audible. I wasn't contributing.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to move for the adoption of the report or make any comments and or amendments to the report. Honorable Dango?
Yes. I've checked the report itself. I think I agree that we must adopt it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Zidu. Honorable Mteta, would you wish to second it?
Yes, Chair. Let me second the Honorable Dodo on the report. We were just going through it now.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any objections and or abstentions in this regard? Okay, if none, then thank you very much, Honourable Members. The report is duly adopted. That being said, Honourable Members, we've come to the end of this meeting. I'm sure there's a lot of information that members need to grapple with, but be that as it may, in our next meeting, we will then take forward the discussions in relation to the Electoral Amendment Bill. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. This meeting is hereby concluded.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair Sheikh.
Thank you, Honorable Members.